All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Can you see it? Did you know this?
Check, but the puck comes right to Pettersson, who tries a bank pass for Besser. In with a shot, he scores!
A moment's notice. Adams Lee.
Here, like I don't cover the Canucks. Yeah. I cover Quinn Hughes and what he's doing to the Canucks.
Just wave the guy and get Demko involved. I wanted him in and down.
Wow, we should do a radio show together. Right on. I want to fist bump you right now.
What Pearl steals, cutting in, shoots, scores.
Don't waste all the good stuff on the off air. Let's go.
Hello, Canucks fans. Welcome back to another episode of the Canucks Conversation, episode 114 this week. Thank you for joining us. We are presented by the great folks at Zephyr Epic. Be sure to check them out, zephyrepic.com. Right now, they have some specials going on with some pre-sale for Series 1, which is the big one, Quads. All of the rookie cards, the young guns are all in there.
I'm very excited for Series 1. Holy cow.
So am I. We had a good pack opening today going into it. It gets us pretty fired up when we're doing these pack openings right before the podcast. But this one was a really good one. We had a lot of cool cards. A signed Bo Horvat card came out of it. You got a rookie DiPietro card, looking at it right now.
Yeah.
Good looking cards. DiPietro diving has been a success so far.
And the mirror Kucherov and McDavid in the same box. Like that's ridiculous. That's a really good pack right there.
Yeah, it's solid. I was really happy with it. So, yeah, check them out. We always say it. Zephyr packs are juiced.
Promo code Canucks Convo gets you $5
off. $5
off.
Free shipping over $50. We don't give them enough of a shout out to Zephyr Epic, but they are awesome people.
They are. They're good people.
Incredible people to deal with.
We love them so much.
So much. And cards.
Who doesn't like cards?
All right, we got a
bit of stuff to talk about, Chris.
We have a bit of stuff. There's some stuff that I want to talk. Normally, we only stick to Canucks stuff, right? Like, oh, that's what we do on this show.
Do I get to give my World Series breakdown?
No, we're not doing a World Series breakdown. Well, there's some other stuff, because I found that we had some interesting conversation. We heard some interesting conversation on radio today about certain things. We'll get into them quite a bit as the episode goes on here. But the first thing, let's just cover the most recent news, I guess, of Guillaume Brisebois being re-signed for the Vancouver Canucks. I think it's a fine signing for them. It's in the similar boat to me as just getting Ashton Sautner.
Yeah, it's not a big deal.
No, it's not. But, like, this guy is a 7-8-9 NHL defenseman. Like, he's a good AHL defenseman. Brisebois is a solid guy. I think he's better than Chatfield. I think that he's a guy that plays a quiet game, and I think that having him back at the AHL is good. They had a really good defense core in Utica last year. I mean, you look at Ashton Sautner, he was probably the best. And then Brogan Rafferty was definitely the best scorer. Yolevi, Chatfield, and then Brisebois, like, they had a really strong top five guys. Dylan Blugis was excellent when he played.
Wow.
Mitch Elliott brought offense. Like, they had a really good defense core to go with the good group that they had for the forward group. So it's nice to kind of get these guys back in the fold just so that that team has, like, you know, some sort of maybe chemistry build between them, because it's a great spot for these young players to develop right now. And then if you're kind of bringing back a similar team with similar young players, I feel like it's good for them. And I feel like I'm really glad that they got this deal done, even though it's a simple one.
And something people listening to this podcast last week would have heard is us talking about the AHL and, oh, what's going to happen with the AHL? Are these guys going to have to go overseas? We found out this week, between the time we recorded that episode, that the AHL is coming back on February 5th. They are targeting a return to play. We still don't know what it'll look like in terms of that Canadian division that they were talking about, like bringing the Canadian teams down south and letting them play against all the other American teams. So we'll have to wait and see for that. But the Canucks aren't going to be, you know, there was a worry. I was talking to Cam Robinson about this, is, you know, spots are filling up in Europe. Like, it wasn't going to be easy for Jack Rathbone to find work. If he was cut from the Canucks camp, what's he going to do? Sit on his rear end at home and work out? Like, that's not going to benefit him too much, especially when that's all he's been doing for the past, you know, year. So, man, like, it's a really big deal that they've came to this deal and that they're going to be able to use their farm team, because, man, like, that's not good for Jack Rathbone's development if he's just sitting at home.
Most definitely. And we're going to talk a little bit of Jack Rathbone later on in the episode as well when we talk about your piece that you wrote. Break that down a little bit. And yeah, I think it's a great... I mean, like, there's a lot of these guys in the Vancouver Canucks organization that are in a spot right now where this year is huge for them in the AHL.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I think of Cole Lynn. Like, Cole Lynn is just on the brink of being a guy who's ready to be called up to the NHL. Like, he's just on the brink right now for me. I said it last year. He'd be more impactful than Louis Erickson in an NHL lineup right now. And if he's able to, you know, go back to Saskatchewan as he is right now, he's been working hard. I've heard some stuff from people around Colin. Apparently, he's just an animal in the gym. Like, he's been an absolute monster through the offseason here. He's putting on some weight, playing a lot of golf. So hopefully he comes back with a, you know, somewhat of a more confidence. Like, he had the huge confidence jump from his first year to his second year. Now I expect him coming into his third year, like, he won't be afraid of anyone in the AHL anymore. But yeah, like, I know we threw the idea out there last week on the podcast, but, like, having them just do a Canadian division would be a lot of fun. And even if they travel with the Canucks, wherever the Canucks are, whoever the Canucks are playing, if their minor league teams play each other, like, I love that idea so much.
I do too. Man, somebody tweeted it at us, actually, after that episode that we did. They're like, you guys realize there's no way NHL owners are going to be paying for an AHL team to fly around with them, right? And then the AHL teams can't really afford that. So I didn't really think of it that way, but it's possible. So I don't know. Like, it doesn't seem realistic to me that they're going to travel around with the NHL team. That just doesn't seem realistic.
Yeah, I like the idea of it, and I feel like you could somehow make it happen, but at the same time, maybe they go on a very different thing where all the teams are kind of just in, like, not really a bubble, but sort of in, like, the same area. Like, man, you know, like, it would be so funny to see them all go to, like, Saskatchewan, you know, like, go to Saskatoon and play there, or somewhere in Manitoba. I heard Manitoba had bad COVID numbers today,
actually. Saskatchewan did, actually, too.
Really? The prairies?
Their numbers are all going up.
Hitting the prairies, man.
What's that second wave? Anyway, speaking of COVID, if you're done talking about the Comets, we got to talk about this thing with the OHL. Like, this is a Canucks podcast.
Yeah, but this is one of the things I was talking about. It's not Canucks
stuff. Bizarre. So,
it really is.
My understanding of the situation, you correct me if I'm wrong, is that the provincial government in Ontario has told the Ontario Hockey League that they can only play if there's no contact in the game. So they can play a no contact game. And, you know, I mean, there's a plethora of issues immediately when you even bring that up. We can get into them, but the one that comes off the bat to me is, okay, so who's going to enforce this? What's considered contact? Like, no body checking was the verbiage used. Okay, so every puck battle, every board battle, you know, I would argue that without body contact or whatever, like you watch women's hockey, for example, that's what I kind of think about when I see no contact. Because again, like, that's a rule they have in women's hockey. It's still has a lot of contact.
Like, there's almost more contact because you can't like push someone off of you.
Yeah.
That's what I think the idea of body checking is, like pushing and making the effort to push them away from you or hit them, you know, with contact by extending them, like extending your arms, extending your stick, extending whatever you're using to hit. Like, that's why I think that like board battles are going to be worse without body contact, because you can't extend that. Like, that's what I get from checking. It's like extending on contact. So, like, you're literally just going to be bumping up against each other. I find this ridiculous.
I don't think it's going
to
happen.
I don't see how, like, if they can somehow prove to me the way that this is safer, then I could understand it. But I feel like it, like,
wouldn't fishbowl helmets just be safer?
It would.
In general?
That's what I would think.
And then there's the whole problem with how do you evaluate this talent? These are draft eligible players playing. So, you know, this isn't a slight against Elias Pettersson, but if Elias Pettersson played in a no-contact league, he'd put up like 200 points in a season. So if you have one of these guys who comes out, like, how do you... And they're not even there. You can't even... They're not even scouting in person. They're going to be in video. So how do you even evaluate that talent? Like, do you grade on a curve when you're watching these guys play? And, well, this guy scored 90 points, but he only scored 40 points last year when there was checking, so... You know, like, I don't know. It just brings up so many questions. And I honestly, like, I wonder if the OHL just starts to look at either moving somewhere else. Like, maybe they'll go figure it out and play a tournament in the States or something. I don't know what they're going to do. But to me, like, I just can't see it happening with no body checking. I can't see them starting the season.
It's like, I understand that they want to get a date set and try and like get everything going for it, but I feel like this is something that's going to be very fluid. And the fact that they came out, the OHL is, you know, I would say that the OHL, like, I feel like the OHL is bigger than the Q. I don't know if the OHL is bigger than the Dub. The Dub's pretty big. Like, out of CHL leagues, I think OHL is probably the second biggest.
I think it's the biggest.
The biggest?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe, but I would say Dub might be a little bit more followed because it's so wide just on the west side, right? But like, I think that, looking at what the OHL is trying to do, it's cool that they're trying to get ahead of it, right? Ahead of certain things, but this just ain't it. Like, I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I'm not going to try.
No, neither
of
us are.
But like, I feel like if you're bumping up against people that much in a hockey game, like, I've heard the idea that like face-offs were going to be taken out, right? Like, that was something a while ago that we heard even before like the NHL started. That was like people were talking about face-offs being the thing taken out because you're getting down so close to someone. And yeah, body checking makes sense to me if it's just like you're bumping into the guy with like your open face.
Okay, but this, like, is that hockey. Like, I get the whole face-off thing. I get it. But like, people are going to, you're going to sit next to people on the bench. It's not like, dude, it's not going to work.
I'm all for being safe and everything. I just don't see how this makes it that much
safer. Hockey's not a great sport for this.
No, it's not.
It's not. Like, baseball is a great sport for it. Everybody's spread out. You're touching the ball. Use hand sanitizer, whatever. You're spaced out for the most part. Obviously, there's the worry of the umpire, catcher, batter. But for the most part, you're pretty spaced out. And again, like, you even saw at the end of the World Series, I told you I'd slip in a World Series thing here. Like, Justin Turner gets COVID, gets a positive COVID test during the eighth inning and has to get pulled from the game. So, I don't know. Like, I feel like no sport is immune. And, like, you know, locally here, the BCHL had two positive cases. Or what I think one positive case, they didn't play two games as a result of it. They just stopped those games and told those teams not to come out.
We saw it like this past week in the SHL too. SHL canceled games again because of a COVID outbreak on their
inevitable.
Teams.
It's like
inevitable. I think a lot of it is like, and you're seeing it with these bubbles, right? Like, bubbles are very successful, even though the Turner yeah. whatever. Somehow he got
so
that, it.
That's not a bubble. It wasn't a bubble. So they had a hub city, and like it was very loose.
They were
lots
doing a good job though for a long time.
Baseball?
Didn't they only have that was the only one through the playoffs, right?
Through the playoffs, yes.
That's before that they were really bad. I know that.
Yeah, like the whole Miami Marlins now has COVID.
Yeah.
But
no, but I mean like they did a good job of doing that's what I'm trying to say. Like if I think it's more about what these players are doing in their everyday life compared to what they're doing on the ice. I feel like if you have not even like restrictions, but just like sort of guidelines that the guys have to go by when they're off the ice, I feel like that's a lot safer way of limiting the spread of this virus than body checking is. I feel like they should be looking more at that, not like a bubble. Like you don't need to put these teenagers in a bubble, right? Like that would be tough. And like, I like how the WHL is doing it. These guys in BC are going to play the guys in BC. They each have their own division. You're going to have the American teams playing each other. You're going to have the Prairie teams playing each other. Like, I like the way they're doing that, but I think that just looking at it off the ice is the better way to look at it. Have specific guidelines for off the ice more than you have on the ice because you're changing the sport completely, taking out body checking, and I don't see how that's helping that much, helping the sport.
I got to see the science behind it before I make an opinion.
Too.
But
yeah, we...
From what I understand of the virus and its nature, this isn't going to help much.
No, it might, you know, I don't know. Maybe it helps a little bit, but yeah, it's going to be...
What the hell do we know?
Nope, so, exactly.
Let's wait and see, but I think this is going to be a fluid situation and it's one that we're going to have to follow going forward.
Yeah, most definitely. Well, let's get into the article that you just wrote.
Thank you.
We'll get into that now.
This is like a vintage Canucks convo. You just ask me about articles I've written. When I guessed it on the show, you'd be like, oh, so you just wrote this, and then I'd tell you about my article.
True. Yeah, I guess we'll see what's up. So you wrote about three potential breakout players for the Vancouver Canucks. Why don't we, let's have a little discussion on these three.
Okay, so the first one I want to talk about, and I know you'll probably want to sit out this one for the most part, but you have some good stuff to say, I'm sure. Thatcher Demko. This is a guy who I really think could be, and you know, to preface a little more, you know, the thinking of this article was guys who could be under the radar breakout candidates.
Okay.
And if they're put in the right situation, and then I kind of, you know, you should read it for sure on CanucksArmy.com, but I kind of looked at what would the correct scenario, what would the best situation for these guys to succeed be. So for Demko, I said that the Canucks need to play defense, which is what they didn't last year. They need to guard west or east-west movement. They need to keep pucks to the perimeter. And, you know, these sound like a bunch of cliches, but these are things, folks, that the Canucks straight up did not do in front of Jacob Markstrom. Thatcher Demko comes in against Vegas. They start doing it. In that article, there's a few heat maps there that show you how they defend in front of Markstrom compared to Demko. They're going to need to do that longer than a three-game stretch if they want to have any chance of success. They could be a very successful hockey team with Thatcher Demko in net, but similar to Thatcher Demko, Braden Holtby also needs help on the east-west movement. Like, he doesn't play well against it, and Jacob Markstrom was the best in the league at it.
Yeah.
So it's important that you play defense in front of these guys. You're gonna have to do a much better job than they did last year. I think Nate Schmidt helps them with that. I think you know, Tyler Myers being healthy is definitely going to be a massive boost to that, and just the team defense, the way they guarded that home plate area in that series against Vegas. Like, you go back and look, keeping the pucks to the perimeter, that's what you have to do in front of Demko for him to succeed. And we saw it. The proof's in the pudding there. There was three games. That's not a fluke. Like, it's sustainable. If there's one thing we've learned about Ian Clark and his goaltenders, it's that what Ian Clark does with them is sustainable.
I think the thing that shocked me in the playoffs was watching how athletic Demko was able to be that compared to what he was like all season. It just felt like he was looser. Like, he was more loose the playoffs, it felt like.
You watched him in Utica more than I did, but in Utica, he was like that. Like, his positioning wasn't great, so that was probably why it was part of it. But, man, that guy, he can do the splits, like, no problem. Like, nobody's business. And I saw him doing it at Boston College. And, yeah, you're right. He just looked way more comfortable. He looked a lot more like the goalie we'd seen in the AHL and in the NCAA. And I think he kind of came away from that at the end of the year when he was playing in March there. You know, in talking to him, he said that it was the most pressure he's ever felt in his life. And yeah, like, Ian Clark was straight up with him and just said, listen, this is a situation with some added pressure. You're either going to come out better for it or you're going to crumble. It's going to be up to you. Demko struggled for sure. It was, you know, like I said, it was the most pressure he's ever felt, but he grew from it, right? And then, you know, I think you can cross that off the list. He told me that was the most pressure he's felt in May. That's what he told me. So yeah. I think if you ask him now, I'm pretty sure playing in the playoffs of elimination is the most pressure he's
felt.
Let's
say that there's a 60-game NHL season next year. Mm-hmm. How many games does Thatcher Demko start?
40 if he plays well.
But 40 of the 60?
Yeah, it's up to him, right? Maybe 50. It's up to him. He's got to... Dude, here's the thing. Like, so the Canucks sent a clear message to Demko. There was an option to send two messages to Demko. If they re-sign Jacob Markstrom, that message to the Demko camp is, we don't really believe in you. We're not going to be keeping you around for much longer, because everybody knows what's coming up with Seattle. Demko likely would have asked for a trade, and you can't blame him.
Yeah,
he's been told he's the goalie of the future. Now it's his time. That's the message.
Is the future now, though? That's the question.
No, but it's up to him if it is, right? Like, is the future now with Elias Pettersson? Were we saying that at the start of his year? No, but then at the end of the year, damn right we were. And same with Quinn Hughes. Like, who knew these guys were going to be so good? And they are. So it's going to be up to Demko. And when I say that, like, I'm saying there's a very good safety net behind Demko, right? Like, if Braden Holtby has to play in a backup role, like, that's not a bad thing. Holtby signed knowing that's a very real possibility. He knows that it's going to be friendly competition. Like, if I'm being honest, like, the Canucks goaltending situation, for if you're going to lose Jacob Markstrom, I think what they have now... Again, if you're going to lose Jacob Markstrom, obviously keeping Markstrom is the best case scenario. If you're going to lose Markstrom, I think the Canucks have the best scenario that they could have had out of this.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that bringing in Holtby was a really good spot for them. And yeah. I think that even from what I've heard recently from, I think, I forget his name now, Ryan something, who just became the beat writer for the Kraken. He was just on the VanCast. And they asked him, like, who would the Seattle Kraken look at right now from the Vancouver Canucks, and he said Brayton Holtby without a doubt.
Yeah.
So, you know, if that's what the situation is going to be like, it even works out better for a guy like Mikey DiPietro, who's going to have another full year of being a starter in the AHL and then comes in the 21-22 season as a backup. So, I mean, like, at that point, yeah, you're banking a lot on Thatcher Demko this year, and I think you need to see him play at least 60% of the games.
Yeah.
Like, I know that you can say that you want to see him play 40 out of 60. Like, that's high for me. Like, I think he's got to play 3 out of 5 games.
Yeah.
I think if you have 5 games in a week specifically, like, we're going to probably see a pretty jam-packed schedule, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like three games in 1 week would be nice for him. 3 games in 7 days. Then you do Holtby in there, because they're probably going to have, like, 5 games a week, right? Like, they're going to have to try and bang this season out.
You think so?
Well, close, probably 4 or 5 every week.
Yeah.
Wow. I would say 9 games every 14 days-ish.
Yep. I can see that.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. And, yeah, I think he needs to play that many games this year, because they've banked a lot on him now. You know, like, we still don't know if Thatcher Demko is a proven starter, unfortunately.
Yeah,
having
exactly.
Braden Holtby here is perfect for the backup.
My personal belief is he is. I think if you look at that Vegas series, I truly believe that's not a one-off. That's my opinion. I know some people might disagree. I think Demko is going to be an elite starter, especially if he keeps working with Ian Clark, man.
Yeah, he's in the perfect spot to become one right now after the recent move with Markstrom heading to the Flames as well. We'll get into the other two on the other side, but we'll take a quick break here, give a quick shout-out from our sponsors. We're going to hear from Mike's Hard Lemonade and our friends at Zephyr Epic. We'll see you guys on the other side, and we'll talk about the other two players that Dave wrote about in the article.
And before we go any further, just wanted to give a quick shout out to the presenting sponsor of the Canucks Conversation podcast, Zephyr Epic, Canada's source for trading card games and sports cards. We open a lot of hockey cards from them, and you can too. You can use promo code CanucksConvo for $5 off your order. They ship free anywhere in Canada on orders over $50, so take advantage of that. Again, that is promo code CanucksConvo at ZephyrEpic.com, Z-E-P-H-Y-R, Epic, on all platforms, on Twitter, Instagram, and join them on Twitch every Thursday for weekly case break giveaways. Chris and I have a lot of fun doing these. You guys should check them out as well. We've been having a lot of luck. We open a lot of Quinn Hughes cards, and now we're doing the DiPietro diving. You can catch us on Twitter and Instagram opening hockey cards at random times. It's really hard to find out when we're going to do it, because we don't really know when we're going to do it. But be on the lookout for that, and make sure you go buy yourself some hockey cards, whatever cards you need, from Zephyr Epic. Z-E-P-H-Y-R, Epic, on all platforms. New Mike's Hard Blue Freeze hits you with the nostalgia of a blue freezy with bold blue raspberry flavor and a refreshingly crisp finish. Mike's Hard Lemonade is a Canadian original made with natural flavors. Chris, this is one of the very few alcohols that I actually enjoy. And man, you got to be careful with these things, because they go down like candy.
They do. They are probably easier to take down than a Freezy, because those Freezies, they kind of hurt your throat sometimes, you know, the blue Freezies. These ones don't. These are just absolutely delicious, perfect summertime drink. And I'm wondering what they're going to be like in the winter, to be 100% honest.
I mean, I had one 2 days ago. It was kind of cold. It was raining. It was just fine.
That's good. Even when you're feeling a little blue, you could go for a blue Freeze.
Absolutely. And yeah, if you guys haven't tried it yet, go get yourself some Mike's Hard Blue Freeze.
And thank you very much to our two sponsors there, Zephyr Epic and Mike's Hard Blue Freeze. Be sure to check out those Blue Freeze. All right, we talked about Demko in the start. You got your goalie talk out. Now let's talk players' quads. First one was Adam Gaudette, I believe, right?
Yes. So that was the first player I mentioned in the article. And now, the scenario that I've set out that's the best situation for Adam Gaudette to truly have a breakout year and really give the Canucks a lot of value on that contract. Now, on the other side of that coin, if he goes out and has a huge year, gonna have to pay him next summer, and
he's gonna be deal.
Added to the crop that already features Thatcher Demko, Elias Pettersson, and Quinn Hughes. So when we talk about a cap crunch not letting a team improve, you kind of look at that and say, okay, that might be a little bit tough, because remember, like, Louis Erickson's still gonna be on the books, Jay Beagle, Antoine Roussel, like, these guys are still on the books next summer, right? So it's gonna be tough again next summer for them. But again, like, let's talk about Gaudette himself. The situation I've determined that would be the absolute best for him is, first of all, getting time on that first power play unit. He would be exceptional there. Like, he, and I'm thinking in Tyler Toffoli's spot, because Gaudette really is a fantastic player on the power play, and he's got a lot of good offensive instincts, especially when he's given time with the puck. When he has time to, like, lean into a shot, he's really good.
He's never been able to play with players that skilled either.
Yeah.
On his power play unit, right? He was at Northeastern. He tore it up there. He's on the second unit. He tears it up there. But I think he should be on the left half wall.
Isn't that where Toffoli was?
No, Toffoli was like behind the net.
Okay, sorry.
That's what I thought.
Sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, put him on the left half wall. That's where he rips his shot from all the time.
Sorry.
Then Miller down low, Horvat in front of the net, bumper position, Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson.
Wasn't that how they did it with Toffoli on the side?
No, they did Miller there on the left side.
It's been a while since I've watched Canucks hockey.
I miss Canucks hockey, man. Can we just get back to, like, we're not that far away from training camp. I can't wait. I'm pretty excited for training camp. Anyways, Adam Gaudette, what is it, 33 points last year?
Yep.
So, like, what was the situation
output,
that puts
getting,
him into better than that?
Well, he was getting fourth line minutes, right? So, you know, the situation is putting him on the first line. And I know we've talked a lot about Jake Virtanen on that line. Dude, Adam Gaudette's got a lot of offensive instincts. And if the Canucks are worried about Gaudette as a third line center, and that's holding them back, like, they couldn't play that line in the playoffs. We've talked about it so many times on this show. Like, his defensive game needs to improve before he can be a true third line center. So do you let him grow those abilities playing wing on the first line? I don't know how much playing wing helps your defensive abilities as a center down the line, so maybe that'll hurt his development a little bit. But I don't know, like, do you just try and convert him into a star winger? Like, maybe he's just going to be one of those guys who doesn't really get it on the defensive end as a center.
Yeah, he switched to number 96, so he's kind of going down that road already right now with being a star winger. I've thought about this a lot. Like, Jake Virtanen, his skill set, the things that he does good, the things that he's good at and excels at are his speed and is able to get past guys and drive to the net when he actually has the drive to go to the net. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what the thing that I like about Adam Gaudette is he can score in so many different ways, and he attacks the net so hard.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, he really attacks the net hard. Like, he goes to the net, he goes to the dirty areas. He's not afraid to score that way, which I think would work out great with Miller and Pettersson.
Exactly.
The other thing that I just saw from the series against Vegas is that Adam Gaudette's going to give you 100% effort on every shift.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to go out there, he's going to forecheck, even though he might not be in the perfect spot every time, he's going to give you full effort. And I think if he does move to a winger spot, he'll be a little bit more effective, because all he's got to do is worry really about the point man at that point at 5-on-5. So I like the idea of Gaudette there. I think he might be a, you know, if you were to put Jake Virtanen on that line for 82 games, or you put Adam Gaudette on that line for 82 games, like, I'm not 100% confident that Gaudette would get more points. Like,
I am.
I would still probably lean in Jake's direction, to be honest. I think that Jake would put up more goals and points in that spot, but Gaudette would really bring a lot of effort that you're going to get consistently that you're not getting with Jake Virtanen. Mm.
Yeah, and I think that's partly why I say that Gaudette would probably get more points by the end of it. I don't know, like, we saw the Pettersson line play with Jake. It just, I don't know, like, I'd really like to see Gaudette get a shot with them. And
The problem is, like, when Jake's on with those two guys, it's a really good line. Like,
but it's not consistent.
They dominate Corsi in some games when they're together. They control the puck in the offensive zone so much, but you're right, it's not consistent. But it's not like Adam Gaudette's Mr. Consistency either.
Yeah, that's
right?
True.
You know, so that's kind of tough to see as well. Like, you see offensive games where at 5-on-5, he just doesn't put up a lot of points at all. Mm-hmm. So he'll go along stretches of games right now, 5-on-5. I'm all for Gaudette going on that first line, something to see, maybe something that you see, you know, when Jake's struggling a little bit, because the other option, like, it's crazy that we've had discussions over the past couple of weeks about these lines, and we haven't really talked much about Brock Besser, because I think that we're both kind of agreeing that the only way the top six stays like a top NHL top six is if Brock Besser goes down and has success with Bo Horvat and Tanner Pearson.
Yeah.
Because there's no other player now that Levo's gone. Like, there's no chance. Like, I don't see anybody else on this roster that can play on that second line and be able to click with Horvat and Pearson.
It's literally just Louis or Roussel.
Yeah. I just wrote about this. It's going to come out on Saturday. But Tyler Mott was the other name that I thought would put in there, because I just thought that you're getting a lot of the similar things that you're getting from Louis Erickson, but you're getting more scoring with Tyler Mott. I mean, like, Tyler Mott can score. He's fast. He scores a decent amount on the penalty kill when they're down a man. I'd like to see him, you know, defending with even strength. I don't know if I want to put him into the top six right off the bat. It's that sounds like a broadcast line combination, maybe. But, like, I just think that, you know, the options, if you're going to use Louis there because of what he's going to make that line defensively, Tyler Mott makes a lot of sense too, but he brings more offense, right? So I don't hate that idea. I wrote about it in an article that's going to drop on Saturday. And yeah, like, I think that that's the problem. Like, we would love to see Brock Besser play on the top line and have the Lotto line be something for a long time. But the fact is, the top six as a whole just is so much worse if Brock Besser is not on that second line, and you're still banking that they have to have success. Like, you're banking on Horvat and Besser having chemistry still and still being able to score goals, which is something you just haven't really seen a lot from that line. But it's almost like you have to bank on that, unless, like, you want to kind of just abandon having a scoring top six, right? Like, the Canucks had a great top six in this most recent playoff run. That was their biggest strength of the team. You know, it was their power play and their top six ability to score goals. And that's the thing. Like, this Canucks team is a lot worse in their top six with the loss of Tyler Toffoli, because he just brought so much versatility. You know, even guys like Josh Levo walking away, like, the Canucks top six that we thought was going to be dominant for the next few years, unfortunately, unless Jake has success or Gaudette has success and Horvat has success with Besser, it's just unfortunately not going to go that way.
And it's important to note, Horvat and Besser were good together in their first year. And you know who else was on that line? Sven Berchi, baby. And that's the other guy I wrote about. I wrote two articles today, and Sven Berchi was the other name I brought up. Like, you know, when we talk about this team, and, you know, you just said it, you're like, there's not a lot of forwards that can fit in the top six. Is Sven Berchi a name that makes sense?
Maybe from the outside looking. I don't see Sven Berchi.
Me neither, man. I don't see Travis Green playing him.
No, I don't think Travis Green will play Sven Berchi. I think that even the way that Jim talked about it, in his meeting with the media, like, he was just like, we're going to see if it's all up to Sven or something. He said, like, it's up to him to get the spot. I think that they've soured on him. I don't think there's going to be any call-ups unless there's a lot of injuries or if they're running, like, a Black Aces setup. Like, I think that when we saw him not report to the bubble, that was the end to me.
Hmm.
Just because, like, I get what he was saying, like, it was for his family. I just feel like it was also quite the little escape route for him to not show up there. Because I do think that there's a lot more at play here than people know about Sven Berchi and the Canucks organization.
I suppose you're right. But, you know, the guy's got a kid, right? Like, his kid's so young. And, you know, if he's probably not going to play, and the organization kind of screwed him over a bit this year, like, I know he wasn't happy about the situation, you know, why would he risk his long-term health potentially by going into a place where he's not certain he might catch COVID? So, like,
Why would he do it in a more dangerous situation in the fall or in the winter? I mean,
yeah, I guess,
like, they had a strict bubble policy.
Well,
you know, the only thing that was like,
does he report to the
AHL?
Like, if he makes the NHL team, I could see it. But does he even report to the AHL
this winter?
Yeah,
I don't know. I think, like, it's like you can do the last ditch effort to try and get traded somewhere, but
yeah, Canucks aren't willing to retain. People are wondering what's holding. Why doesn't anybody want Sven Berchi? Nobody wants that contract. His contract that was signed literally last summer is a bad contract already.
Yeah, I think that he'll be. I think he'll be leaving. I think he'll be leaving North America after training camp, if he even shows up at training camp.
He's going to show up to training camp.
I think that
There's no way he doesn't show up to training camp.
He might. Yeah, like, he probably will, but it also wouldn't shock me to see Sven Berchi go overseas somewhere.
Do the Canucks get cap benefits from loaning him somewhere?
I'm not 100% sure.
I don't think they do.
I don't think so either. If you loan someone.
So there's absolutely no way that's happening.
They have to cut each other, like, neutral agreement or whatever it's called.
Oh, to terminate the contract?
Yeah, like,
that's not going to happen.
No, exactly. So I think that he might just end up getting loaned somewhere, and I'm not sure exactly how.
Well, I don't think they're going to loan him if they can't get any. Like, if Sven Berchi doesn't play on the Canucks, they're going to send him down to get the $1 million in cap space, right? Like,
and then he leaves. I don't know. I don't think
this is crazy. This is going to be another situation to follow, everybody.
Sven Berchi is going to be really interesting if we even, like, because we can't go into the locker room and talk to whoever we want. We're going to have to talk to whoever.
There's no way they send him out on Zoom.
There's no chance they send out Berchi to talk to us, unfortunately. We can request him every single day. We won't get him.
Let's get him on the podcast. Sven Berchi tells all.
Yeah, that'll be quite the episode. Still waiting. You know what? I've been working my phones, trying to get the Nikolai Goldobin tell-all episode for this podcast. That would be incredible.
And Nikita Triamkin.
The Triamkin one is good.
Me and Triamkin speaking Italian to each other.
Most definitely. We have a big interview this weekend, actually. We're not going to talk about it too much.
No, we're not. We're not going to throw you
Hopefully it can happen and be on next week's show. That'll be exciting. But let's talk about the third player then, since that went a Berchi direction. The third player in your article that you wrote about, Jack Rathbone.
Yes. Yes, Jack Rathbone.
What's a surprise guy. Season look like for you then? What would be the
first
number to be like, wow, I can't believe that season just happened at the end of the year?
Yeah, so first of all, he's got to make the team out of camp, right? Like, that's step one for Rathbone. And the reason I put him as an under-the-radar potential breakout candidate is because, you know, a lot of people are comparing this guy's play style, not himself. Like, they're not saying, oh, he's going to be Quinn Hughes. He's going to have a Quinn Hughes-like impact. They're saying he plays a lot like Quinn Hughes in the sense of likes to wheel the puck up the ice, could be something that fits with the Canucks. I find it really interesting because there's about, you know, we've determined that there's one spot available, right, on that third pairing. And whoever gets it is going to play alongside Jordy Benn. It's either going to be Ollie Olevi, Brogan Rafferty, Jack Rathbone. And people kind of know, like, the Canucks have a decent idea of what they're getting in Rafferty and Olevi. Like, it's going to be up to these guys to have good camps. The organization's already seen enough of them. Jack Rathbone basically is a clean slate. He's like a wild card coming into this camp. Like, Travis Green has not seen much of Jack Rathbone. I'm sure of it. So when he comes in, Green's going to be looking to see, like, okay, is this going to be like a diamond in the rough type player at training camp that really deserves to be on the team? Because you look at Quinn Hughes, like, there was maybe three people in the market that were like, oh, maybe he should go to the AHL. Maybe three. Like, maybe. And
three people in all of Vancouver. Forget the market.
Yeah, exactly. And it was apparent right away that he was going to play. So Jack Rathbone's not going to come in and have that impact. But if he has a good enough camp, can Jack Rathbone make the team on a third pairing, jump over Olevi and Rafferty? Because to me, this is Olevi and Rafferty's spot to lose. And I think it's between those two. And then it's a wild card in Rathbone. So I don't know. Like, I'm excited to get to see Rathbone play at training camp. Like, I'm very excited to report on this and see just how good he actually is. Because, yeah, like, there's some people, you know, like Thomas Drantz is really high on this guy and his abilities, right? So, I don't know. I find it really interesting. It's going to be another one to follow, and training camp's going to be fun. There's a lot
of
narratives
going in. The only thing that's tough for Rathbone is he's got to not only be the best of those three, but he has to be good enough for you to say, okay, that means Nate Schmidt now has to kill penalties.
Ooh,
because if it's, like, he needs to be that much better than Olevi, because Olevi's a good option to kill penalties, and if you have Olevi and Ben as your third pairing, then you have Edler Myers as your first penalty kill, and then you have Olevi Benn as your second group. Then you give Nate Schmidt that break. You give Quinn Hughes that break. So, like, Jack Rathbone needs to be good enough and that much better than Ole Olevi, because Olevi's going to bring something in the penalty kill that Rathbone just won't, right? So, like, that's how good he has to be in this camp.
My hot take is that Nate Schmidt's going to kill penalties for the Canucks, even if Olevi's healthy. I don't think Olevi's not going to kill penalties out of the gate. I don't see Travis Green doing it.
I would.
You think so? No, I know you would, but with Travis. Do you think Travis would?
Yeah, I think Travis would too, because Travis knows that Olevi's been killing penalties in the AHL for 2 years.
Yeah, they've talked about it.
Every single game that Olevi's played in, he's killed penalties. Like, he didn't take a year to develop into being a penalty killer. He got to Utica, he started killing penalties right when he got there. This past season, he was the first guy over the boards every time. Mm. Like, this is the Utica Comets' best penalty killer. In Ole Olevi. Like, he's ready for the NHL to be a penalty killer. If I don't know if his body's ready, because, like, he's still very injury prone.
He blocks a ton of shots, man.
He does. He blocked the most shots per game in Utica last year. So, like, he's going to be a tough one. Like, that's the only way that Like, Rathbo needs to really stand out. Rathbo needs to be so damn good at camp.
Yeah, he does.
You know who's in a almost the exact same spot for me is Nils Höglander. Like, Nils Höglander and Jack Rathbone can both make this team. Like, they can both make the team. On opening night, you could see Rathbone and Höglander in a Canucks jersey.
Yeah.
But they both need to have unbelievable camps. I would bet more on Höglander being able to do it just because I've, like, all the prospects that I've talked to that were at the prospects camp with Höglander said he was unreal.
Just
I know
the
way that he
player.
Practices. He's a training camp type player, right? He's a guy who looks amazing in practice. And like when they're not having, you know, when you have space on the ice and he's able to be creative and do his thing, like he's going to be like, everyone's going to be like, wow, where the hell is this kid learning these tricks? And where is he, you know, and like, is he going to be able to do the NHL level? So I would lean a little bit more that Höglander has a better chance of making the team. And that's still low. Like, I think that Rathbone is such an uphill battle for him to just make the team this year that it's because Quinn, he's never going to kill penalties. He shouldn't ever have to kill penalties, you know? And Nate Schmidt, like, he could kill penalties. He was fourth in Vegas last year in the regular season for minutes killed, but he was still under 100 minutes. Like, for the full season, he was under 100 minutes. That's not a lot of penalty kill time. He was switched out for a lot of guys that were coming in there as well. Like, they had a bevy of guys around like 50, 60 minutes of penalty kill. So he really didn't kill a lot of penalties, but I mean, like, he can, right? And I think that's why Jordy Benn is kind of like, we've talked about it. Like, Jordy Benn has to be on that spot. You can't do Yolevi and Rathbone.
Yeah. Exactly.
Or you can't do Yolevi
Rafferty
and Rafferty. That, yeah, that's what I meant to say.
Like,
you can't have both because they don't kill penalties. And to get that to another degree, like, Rathbone's not going to kill penalties at the NHL.
Yeah.
Neither's Rafferty.
Yeah.
Rafferty didn't kill many penalties at all in Utica. Like, he rarely killed penalties in Utica.
Yeah.
So, but then, like, I look at it so strange that, like, penalty killing in the NHL as a defenseman, I feel like a lot of defensemen can do that. It's just, who do you want to be out there doing it? Because defensemen, their whole like, job is made off of defending and moving the puck out of your defense. Like, I feel like anybody can kill penalties if you're a defenseman. It's just up to the coach of if you want to use that guy to kill penalties.
You don't want Quinn Hughes eating pucks.
You don't, exactly.
Like, but like, that's the same reason, like,
to say that on the other side, like, I don't really sound this mean, but like, I would rather Brogan Rafferty be blocking shots and like eating pucks, you know, like, that's what he's going to have to do to be an NHL player. So why not let Brogan Rafferty kill penalties? It's not like he's a zoo in his own zone. You're putting Tyler Myers back there on your first penalty kill yet, and he's a zoo in his own zone at times. So, like, I don't think it's a bad idea to just, even if, like, I find that so strange how some defensemen kill penalties and some don't. Because I feel like a defenseman, unless you're, like, a Quinn Hughes mold, like, exactly like a Quinn Hughes type of player, like, every defenseman should be able to kill penalties to me.
Yeah. I mean, Quinn Hughes could kill penalties. That's the thing. Like, he could do it.
Even
Patterson.
What I'm saying. Every defenseman...
Yeah.
In the NHL, if you're in the NHL, you should be able to kill penalties as a defenseman.
Yeah, that, I suppose you're right.
Like,
but
unless you're
Kale
McCarr,
how good
you're
are you
Hughes.
At killing penalties, right? Like,
it varies, right? It does, but like, how bad can you really be,
I guess,
at standing on one side of the net and defending passing lanes?
What about Tyler Myers?
Well, that's the problem. Tyler Myers is going to be on the first unit killing penalties next year.
Yeah, I guess.
You know? Unless they put Jordy Benn up there.
No, that might be worse.
Maybe. That's the thing. Like, if you're going to use these guys, like to look at the way that an NHL defenseman has all these type of skills, and you're going to say that Alex Edler and Chris Tanev were some of the better penalty killers, like, I don't know. To me, like, Tyler Myers had a lower goals against per 60 on the penalty kill, but, like, does that really mean that he's a better penalty killer? It's so hard to try. Like, you need to – this is where, like, the analytics of looking at people and how much you get scored on is so hard because, like, unless you have – the stat of how they match up against first power play units and second power play units, obviously the first power play unit guys are going to get scored on more. So obviously Edler and Tanev got scored on the most because they're out there against first units every single time. But it's so hard. This is the type of thing where analytics can only help you so much to me. This is where eye test is like the thing that you have to go for. Is how good is a guy at killing penalties? Look at how he actually kills penalties. Look at how he blocks shots. Look at how he breaks up passing lanes. And Yolevi does a great job of all that. That's why I think Yolevi is so far ahead of Rathbone, even just coming into camp, even if Rathbone's the better player, just the fact that there's already trust in Yolevi. And that was the question that I asked him. Like, have you talked to the coaches about playing NHL minutes as a penalty killer? And he says, the coaches know, like, the coaches have seen me play. They saw the improvement. So I think that coming into camp, to round this back to what you said earlier, like, to me, in my eyes and Travis Green's eyes, he's playing Ole Yolevi way ahead of Nate Schmidt on the penalty kill.
Interesting. And Ollie Levy's going to be the top four, too. Remember last week?
Yeah, that's not happening.
Man, I got to refine that article. I was working on it, but then I went in a different direction, did the Berchi article and then this one as well. Man, it's going to be an interesting season, like from top to bottom, like right from training camp. Yeah, right from training camp, it's going to be insane.
Well, there's so much, like, we're going to talk about it probably like every week going into it, but like these three defensemen, the fact that Jordy Benn could play both sides, and to me, he's going to be the guy who makes it for sure. You know, I think like he's like, they just, to me, they can't play two young guys on their third pairing, not with Travis Green coaching you for sure. So I think that Ben makes the team, and the fact that he can play both sides, and then you have three guys in such different situations, like Olajuwon, the high draft pick who's been injured in the first 2 years of playing professional hockey. Then you have Brogan Rafferty, who literally was a rookie, undrafted, comes from the NCAA, has an incredible rookie season. And then you have Jack Rathbone, who just has not had any professional hockey experience, but he's, you know, he's gotten so much better every single year that, like, it's such a cool storyline for training camp to watch what these three defensemen are going to do. And if one falls back at all, like, the next two are right there ready to pounce. Like, they have to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm still riding with Jordy Benn and Brogan Rafferty on opening night, though. I think Rafferty makes it.
I still think it's Yolevi or Rathbone. But you know what? That's a good point that it's going to be a righty and lefty. Because Travis is already going to be forced to play two left-hand, like a second pairing or a first pairing of two lefties.
Well, can you imagine him having five left-shot defensemen?
Yeah, I can't. So, you might have a point
there.
It's tough.
That's why I think Rafferty's got the upper hand. It's his spot to lose going into this. After what he did in the NHL, being the right shot guy, being the oldest of the group, I think it's his spot to lose. But a lot of people want to see Yolevi succeed in that spot.
And I think the coaching staff is at the top of that list.
I think the management's at the top of the list.
Yeah, actually.
You know, like the Jim Benning wants that more than anything for him to succeed and actually be an NHL player. That's all he's wanted ever since he drafted him. So
sounds like he wants that with Jalen Chatfield, too.
Oh, yeah, I'm glad that we haven't heard Chatfield's name in a bit. Chatfield's the worst option.
Oh, my gosh. Remember when those Canucks fans were on Twitter being like, well, Chatfield can play in the top four.
Chatfield's just Chris Tanev, but younger. No, he's not. Blocked the least amount of shots out of all these defensemen.
So
how is that
funny.
Similar?
I'm glad that once they acquired Schmidt, people could stop giving those insane takes.
Chatfield in the top four.
It's going to be fine, guys. Like, no, nobody thought that was going to be fine. The Canucks management did think that was fine. You don't have to put out your neck for these. Anyway, whatever.
Okay. Prospects report, and then let's wrap this thing up.
Yes.
Don't have very much to report this week. Nils Höglander, first goal. I think we talked about that on the last podcast.
What team does he play for?
Höglander.
There you go. I just said that. And then Vasily Podkolzin made his way back up to the KHL. Played 40 minutes. Coach didn't play him. Did I talk about this on the last episode?
Yeah, you did.
Okay, well, anyways, that game sucked. He's back in the KHL. I believe he's going to stay up with the team for a little bit here, but he does go to a tournament next weekend. So that would be fun to kind of talk about that. He's going to have games like every day or like 3 out of 4 days. So that's going to be fun. Watching him play with U20 players. Oh, man. I tell you, folks, follow along on Twitter right now. It's a good time to be following at ChrisFavor39 because the gifts that are going to be coming next weekend from Vasily Podkolzin playing in a U20 tournament, I tell you, get ready, get on board at ChrisFavor39.
And check out CanucksArmy.com too.
Some of them will be there too. Not as much as you'll see on at ChrisFavor39 on Twitter.
Shameless.
That's for sure.
Shameless.
There'll be article wrap-ups, probably from each day.
There better be.
Well, I got a quota hit here now at Canucks Army.
Yeah, I got to hit you.
As you'll see on Saturday with three 500-word articles banged out.
Oh, my God.
You'll see that.
It's like in school. They're like, yeah, don't leave this till the last minute. And then it's like the night before you just like do the final three assignments of the semester.
Yeah, I did that. Like our final project was like a 9-minute podcast. I did it like the day before it was due.
That's so funny.
And that was like what we're supposed to be working on all year long. It's like it's a 9-minute podcast.
What'd you get on that, by the way?
I had to cut it down.
Oh, wow.
Freaking Rob Williams. Stop talking.
Guy talks so much.
Guy is just
CKNW's finest.
Writing about non-sports and stuff. What a what a crazy guy.
Can't wait to open Instagram.
We'll wrap it up there. Big shout out to our presenting sponsor, Zephyr Epic. Like I said, Series 1, man. About to drop here pretty soon if you guys want to get involved in the card game. Series 1 is the one to do it. Upper Deck, Series 1, it's the standard. You got Young Guns cards in there. So check that out. For David Quadrelli, my name is Chris Faber, and thank you for tuning into another episode of The Canucks Conversation.
Hello, thank you for calling Thomas Drant.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra.
and UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit UH1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.